Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Saturday, September the 15th, and today we're going to do another show about Cuba. We have two great guests joining us here in a minute, Regina Anavi, our friend. She's been on our show many times before. She's not only a great friend of Cuba, but also an author, and Orlando Luis Pardo Lasso, who left Cuba in 2013, and he's been on our show a couple of times before. We're going to talk about a book, not necessarily a brand new book, but a book that has caused a lot of controversy, a lot of discussion about prostitution in Cuba. And then in the second segment, we're going to talk about what is happening in Cuba today. Orlando wrote a post about this recently. So we'll talk about these reforms and what's going on with Díaz-Canel. Is he a transitional figure, or is he somebody who is really going to make a difference in Cuban history? We don't know. It's too early. But we're going to get that from our friends today. Let me say hello to our friends Regina and Orlando. Hello, Regina.
Hello, Silvio.
Hello, good morning, Silvio.
Hi, Orlando. Welcome as well. It's always interesting to chat to both of you. And now with both of you, we've done separate shows, and now we're doing it together, which is a real treat. But let me do this before we get into the topic. Regina, introduce yourself. I know you wrote a book about Cuba, and you went to Cuba at one time, and I always like to think of you as a fellow Cuban in spirit. So tell us about yourself.
Yes, I feel like I'm a Cuban in spirit, too.
Yeah.
Well, I started out being, like so many people, a supporter of the revolution in my misguided youth. And I went there to cut sugarcane with the Venceremos Brigade and was very disillusioned and realized what was going on. That was in 1971 when they were putting homosexuals in labor camps. And I went back a few, maybe 30 years later, and my guide and I became good friends, and he told me what was really going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back several times to help him get out. He and his family are in Canada now. And also another friend of mine who is here in San Francisco now. And after that, I began translating for the Translating Cuba website. And I also just translated Amir Valle's book, Havana, Havana, Babylonia, which is about prostitutes in Cuba.
Yes.
Oh, and my book was called Out of Cuba,
exactly,
Memory of a Journey.
Which is a very nice book. And that book you wrote originally in English, but I remember you also did it in Spanish, right?
Right,
I remember
it's been translated
Beatriz,
into Spanish,
I think,
all
helped
available.
You with one. Yeah, Beatriz, I think, helped you with a couple of pages of that one, checking the translation, as I recall. I hope she I know she did a good job on it.
Yes.
Well, Regina, you mentioned that you made a youthful mistake. I made a lot of mistakes in my young life or youthful days or whatever. One of them was never supporting the revolution because as a young person, of course, I was very much our whole family leaving at that time. Orlando, tell us about yourself, please.
Yes, I'm a Cuban writer. I graduated in biochemistry in Havana University, but what I really like is to write fiction, nonfiction journalism. And I was a member of the blogging movement in Cuba since maybe 2007, 2008, until I left the country. By the way, the day that Hugo Chavez died or was pronounced dead in March 5th, 2013. I keep very active. I'm a social activist. I am calling for citizen initiatives to bring democratization to Cuba, to stop a regime, a government, a system, whatever you want to call it, whether you are a person from the right, from the left, from the center.
Right.
It's a system where the fundamental freedoms of individuals are not guaranteed because by the Constitution, and we will be talking about this later, by the Constitution, the government sequesters the sovereignty of the nation and, mm-hmm. and makes all of the Cubans just servants of the Communist Party.
Right. Yeah, I think all of us, what we would like, and I share your thoughts here, what we would like is a future Cuba that Cubans actually pick or choose, not a
yes.
Cuba where, you know, somebody is making that call for us, whether it's appointing his brother when he's sick or now
mm-hmm.
Appointing, you know, we just want a Cuba where people, Cubans get to pick whatever future they want. Well, Regina, you're hosting a roundtable today, I think so, today in San Francisco about the book. Tell me about the roundtable and tell the audience about the book, please, and what it's all about. I said in the introduction
yes.
that it's a bit depressing, but
it is depressing.
But tell us about
it. Yes, what I'm doing today is I'm just hosting an audience discussion of a movie that's part of what's called the Legacy Film Festival on Aging, and it really has nothing to do with the book. I'm not going to be promoting the book, but I'll say something about the book. I've been wanting to translate this book for a long time, and this book was published in Spanish and English last year by Neo Club Ediciones in Miami. And the you know, everybody I talked to in Cuba had read this book. It was passed originally underground in Havana, and of course Amir was sent into exile as a result of it. And in the new edition that he wrote, he talks much more about how that happened, the process. And also, I mean, what I found interesting was this book is, he was a journalist, and he was able to get into this underground through a friend of his and get these people to talk to him. That, to me, is what is unusual about the book. A lot of it is interviews. These chapters divided into 7 parts. And he got these people to really open up, tell their story. He found out a lot that was going on in this underground world, and so it's really a piece of journalism. Now, it's a very hard sell in the United States. Nobody, well, at least in San Francisco, has really knows the history or know who Amir Valle is. And the people who have read it, one person really liked it and got very involved with the main character, Susimil, and really cried at the end. And another person just thought it was anecdotal pornography. And that's the problem. I mean, it's very graphic sexual information, and he caught the way people talk. So you feel like you know these people. And he interviewed both prostitutes and pimps and people involved in the black market. And you get a sense of all this corruption. Now, the book was based on interviews he did in the 90s, but I think a lot of it is still relevant today in Cuba. And then, of course, there's the whole history. One part in each chapter is the history of prostitution in Cuba, and it's really brilliant. As you know, as you and I talked about, it could be a history book in a history class. So it's very, you know, it's a difficult sell, but I'm glad I did it, and you know, I hope people appreciate it. It's really an incredible piece of work.
Yeah, I think any time that, you know, there's no nice way to talk about prostitution, really, at least, you know, the reality of prostitution.
Right.
So the book, I think, does, yes, you're right, the graphic and all. I mean, it is graphic, yes. And
mm-hmm.
I can certainly understand why some people could be offended by it. But, of course,
right.
I don't think it was the purpose of the – I have not met the writer, but I'm pretty sure that it was not his purpose to turn this into an X-rated film. I think what he was really trying to do is use prostitution as a way of conveying the reality of women in Cuba. And that's the part that I hope really catches on, because this is really a story of what women are forced to do in Cuba. You know, this is interesting, Regina, because when we first came to the United States, and that's a long time ago in the 60s, we would often hear from not necessarily supporters of the revolution, but we would often hear things like, well, you know, wasn't Cuba, a prostitution capital before Castro. And mm-hmm. that would always offend my parents. My parents would get very angry at that. Mm-hmm. And they would say, no, no, it was not a prostitutional capital. Was there prostitution? Yes, of course. But, you know, prostitution mm-hmm. anywhere. But you know, here we are now into the whatever decade of the revolution, and the government is, in fact, encouraging prostitution. It's
exactly.
almost like a source of foreign currency. I mean, it's
exactly.
like, you know, Batista would have never – you know, gotten away with anything like this.
Right.
So it is really depressing. I know that for my parents, it was very offensive to have to talk about or to have to talk about it back then. But now that I see
mm-hmm.
this, I said, man, they've taken prostitution to a level that I don't think any other country has before. Let me ask Orlando a question, because you were there till 2013. What, you know, what you saw, and you were a writer at the time as well, what you saw of the reality of prostitution in Cuba, does Amir, in your opinion, present it pretty fairly?
Yes, Amir is a great journalist, a great writer, and even in the beginning of his project, he expected, this is the one of the saddest parts, no? Amir Valle expected that his book could contribute to the debate about
mm-hmm.
the social evils that are taking place in Cuba, let's say, nowadays, no? In the last decades. And he was also expecting that this book, Havana, Babylonia, which is now available on Amazon, that Havana, Babylonia could be published in Cuba. He was not expecting to write a dissident book. He was not expecting to be taken as an enemy of the revolution, as he has been labeled. He was censored. He was forced to exile with his family, and he cannot mm-hmm. return to his own country. So, like many mm-hmm. Cubans, Amir Valle is a Cuban citizen that is suffering the migratory apartheid. And in this book, I would like your audience, Silvio, the people that listen to this podcast and your station, to know that this book contributes to make visible one of the many social phenomena in Cuba that are invisible. And more than that are being invisibilized, turned invisible, because of the narrative and the mythology of the revolution. And sadly, because of many tourists and many Americans and many academic people from America traveling to Cuba and not wanting to know, not wanting to see. And this turns the victims into invisible. This is disappearing and turning even more humiliating the situation of common people in Cuba. No? And so Havana, Babylonia is like an ethnography
mm-hmm.
book. And
mm-hmm.
also, in my opinion, it preserves the dignity of all these persons and witness, whatever, if they were involved even into crime, but the dignity, the deep human dignity of these Cubans that has been displaced, that have been forced into prostitution, or even chose to go into prostitution, because this book is also, Silvio, about the moral crisis, the total
mm-hmm.
Deteriorations of values in Cuba under the communist system. It's a book
right.
about the anthropological tragedy of living in a communist society for six decades.
Right. It's interesting you bring this up, because I would recommend to the audience to read the book, of course. But there's also a couple of really interesting interviews that I saw
mm-hmm.
on YouTube where Amir talks about, now the interviews are in Spanish, of course, but he talks about, and he talks about this point that Orlando just made about, you know, how is it possible in a society where people are supposed to have free education, all these great opportunities, that you have to have women, in a sense, choose prostitution as a way of surviving? What happened to careers? What happened to education? What happened to all these promises? And that, I think, you know, I would love to see this book become successful among some of the feminist groups, Regina, people who value
yes.
the role of women in a society, because it seems to me that is, I cannot think of anything more anti-female or anti-woman than a government
right.
basically using prostitution as a source of foreign currency, Regina.
That is a good point, Silvio.
If I may add something, Silvio.
Yes, yeah.
I really recommend this book by Amir Valle, Havana, Babylonia. It's a very, you know, catchy
right.
title, Havana, Babylonia, or Prostitutes in Cuba. I really recommend it not to be understood as a book written to criticize the Cuban Revolution. It's a book designed for all the good faith, goodwill citizens of the world, and especially in America.
Mm-hmm.
It's a book for feminists in America, for those who claim for the rights of minorities in America, for those
sure.
who care about the Cuban people. So Havana, Babylonia is a book to reveal layers of a society that is in a process of the battle, of moral crisis. And
mm-hmm.
somehow, reading this book, you're listening to me, and you read this, find this book in Amazon, or you read it, you are helping for a better future, for a more inclusive future that I think that all Cubans deserve on the island
right.
and in exile.
It's interesting you bring up this point, because I've had friends of mine, particularly from Mexico and from Europe, who have gone to Cuba. And
mm-hmm.
I've asked them for their reaction. You know, I say, okay, well, tell me what you saw. You know, just I'll take whatever
sure.
you want to tell me. Just tell me what you saw. And more than once, they have said, you know, I'm amazed at the number of black prostitutes that I saw.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like the number of black prostitutes is disproportionate to the number of blacks in the island. And I said, well, that's really interesting. That's really interesting. And I find that also interesting, because we've always been told, Orlando, you can take this one, but we've always been told that the revolution has been good for blacks in Cuba. And yet here you have this, a disproportionate number of prostitutes who are young black women. I thought they were the beneficiaries of the revolution, Orlando.
Yes, what happened, Silvio, in part is that, you know, like many things under a totalitarian government, racism was abolished in Cuba by decree. So
right.
as it was abolished,
yes.
you cannot talk about that. You cannot discuss. You cannot claim your rights if you are an Afro-Cuban person, because racism disappeared in January
right.
1959 by decree. And this is very unfair and very sad also for the Afro-Cuban community on the island. Where are the organizations defending the rights of Afro-Cuban people in Cuba, I mean? Where are those organizations? They do not exist, because the subject, the black person in Cuba, the Afro-Cuban community in Cuba, does not exist, because first and foremost, we are all revolutionaries. We are all members of the Communist Party. And so in that big lie, in that big myth, is what I am asking the American society, academics, the press people, person from the media in America, I'm
mm-hmm.
calling them, please, when you travel to Cuba, and Americans are more than welcome to visit my people, the Cuban people, please keep your eyes open. You can fall in love with my country. You can fall in love with my people, beautiful people there.
Mm-hmm.
But
sure.
keep your an eye open. Cubans are no less than Americans. We are as much citizens, or we expect to be as much free citizens of the world as Americans. We deserve the same rights that are being denied to us by a certainly authoritarian government, not to say a totalitarian tyranny.
I would
yes.
like to make a couple of points here, if I may.
Please do. Yeah, go ahead.
How many blacks are there in the upper elite of the Cuban hierarchy? And also your point about if people going there cared about the Cuban people, they should be aware of this. Feminists should care about the Cuban women. My experience has been that the people who go on these organized trips to Cuba don't care about the people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they think they're having a good time, they're drinking mojitos, they're listening to the music. As Orlando says, the people are beautiful, there are the beaches. They take pictures of that old woman with the cigar, and isn't all
mm-hmm.
this poverty picturesque? I don't sense that they really care about the Cuban people.
Yes, I think you're right. And in fact, I remember a few years ago reading in the New York Times a column about racism in Cuba, how, you know, there was some black Cubans who were really protesting about it. But like Orlando said, it's, you know, it was done away with. So it was like, we don't have it here anymore. So you cannot talk
right.
about it. And so that's that's a funny way of eliminating a problem. But it would be like somebody saying, well, you know, we don't have tornadoes anymore, so you can't talk about it. And it's kind of
right,
like, you know,
decree, I like that.
Yeah, by decree.
By the way, Silvio, if I may comment.
Sure.
As part of the reaction to the public, to the circulation, underground circulation in digital format of Havana, Babylonia in Cuba, the government ordered to an official journalist to write a book about this topic. And then another book was published. It's called Flores. I don't remember exactly.
They say Chavez.
Yes, it's a book about that, that somehow deals with the topic and all the efforts of the government to avoid prostitution. And so a very official view was published as a response to Amir Baez's book that never was published in Cuba. And then this book circulated in the big publishing houses in from the Cuban state. And also, Amir Baez started to be attacked, personally attacked, as a person that just wanted to damage the image of the revolution, trying to you know, to push his book into a territory where it does not belong. And by the way, I would like to comment that Fidel Castro, in the mid-90s, during an interview, he mentioned, yes, we may have some prostitution in Cuba, but our prostitutes, I'm quoting Fidel Castro Ruz, commander-in-chief of the Cuban Revolution, he said, our prostitutes are the best educated prostitutes of the hemisphere, in the hemisphere. So that's very sad and shameful for the leader of a country to say in front of the press.
Right.
Actually,
and of course, go ahead, Regina, and then we'll
Amir
take a break.
Amir told me recently that the book was published recently in Cuba in a small private edition. So somebody did publish it recently.
Well, I would assume that we're going to take a break, but I would assume, Regina and Orlando, that some tourist could sneak it into Cuba, I suppose, you know, with their luggage,
sure,
and bring it in and give it away that way. I mean, I would think that that could happen. But I'm sure when Fidel Castro was talking about prostitution, that reference that Orlando brought up, I'm sure he said, yes, our prostitutes are the most educated in the world. You know, they all have free health care. And on top of that, there's no racism in Cuba because I signed it away in 1959. I'm sure he said that as well. Guys, let me take a quick break, and then when we come back,
sure,
we can do whatever follow-up you like on the book. And then I want to talk a little bit about Cuba today, because Cuba today is undergoing some changes, to say the least. We're going to take a little break. I want you to hear from some of our friends at Blog Talk Radio, and we'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, and we're chatting with our friends Regina Anavi and Orlando Luis Pardolazo. Just a quick reminder, the music that we play on our podcast is from my good friend Carlos Guedes from Venezuela. He lives here in town, and we have a link to his schedule. He's been playing all over the Dallas area, so right under the show description, if you click on that, it'll take you to his schedule. He's getting all around Dallas, and he's having a lot of success, and he's a big friend of our show, and he and his wife Luisa are just great, great friends of ours, and of course, they're undergoing some of their own problems down in Venezuela, which I'm sure all of you are familiar with. Regina, anything else, Orlando, anything else about the book before we move on to the topic? I did want to say one thing about the book very quickly. Forgive me for interrupting you. I think the reader has to know. The reader has to know that, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, that it is a graphic book. It may not be a book you want to give to a teenager, but it is a book that that you do want to read it. But understand, you're reading. Yes, it's a little bit, you might say, pornographic, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
But it is the truth of what is happening
exactly
in Cuba, and you know, it's like, I remember one time talking to a friend of mine who had served in the military, actually on D-Day, when the movie Saving Private Ryan came out. And I said to him, that movie is a little rough, isn't it? Because at the time I had young boys. And he said to me, yes, it is very graphic, but it is what happened. So
I may ask to the American public, not to American readers, were the pictures of the American soldiers in Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq graphic or even pornographic? Was it important to distribute that information so that people could know what was going on? I'm not judging, I'm just bringing up that
right.
question. Well, in Cuba, Cuba is not an isolated island of beauty and the treasure island. No, no, no. In Cuba, there is also a war going on, no? And people are struggling very hard to survive, and they go into things that are not so beauty. And when you travel to Cuba, if you really favor human dignity, you should be aware that there are ugly things taking place in my country, not only because of the government, but also because of the 60-some years that now we have been living under a communist regime. And so it's important if you, for example, like a leftist ideology, okay, but keep in mind that being leftist in Cuba or being socialist or communist in Cuba means something radically different than fighting for social justice in America.
Mm-hmm.
But being
Absolutely.
Socialist in Cuba means being complicit of oppression of a whole nation.
Absolutely. In fact, Regina, you may remember this. I don't know if Orlando... I think this was published before Orlando came to the United States, but there was a man who went to Cuba, and I found the article at Babalu several years ago. There was a man who went to Cuba. His last name, I believe, was Totten. I think that's the right spelling.
Totten. Uh-huh.
And he wrote a book. He wrote an article about the two Havanas. And he said, you go to Cuba, and there's a Havana that greets you with a smile. I'm paraphrasing what he wrote. But
sure.
The Havana that greets you with a smile. And then there's the other Havana that Orlando was just talking about, the Havana where the ugly side of Havana, that it's like behind the facade, you know. And that's what I think when you read this book, you have to understand that what's behind the facade is what this book is talking about, what prostitution has done to young women in Cuba, many of them black, and how it has destroyed the morality of the country. But, you know, Orlando, you were there, so you know this better than me. But I remember many times people saying when you remove God from a society, you sometimes a lot of things happen that maybe you never thought would happen, Orlando.
Yes, I agree with you. And also, we were talking before that about public education and in general that
yes.
Cuba has a good education system. Why is it good? Because it's public, because it's massive for all Cubans. Yes, but it's not a system that you can really choose. As a family in Cuba, as a parent in Cuba, you cannot choose to educate your children, for example, in any religion. All education in school is mandatory without God, without transcendental values. And at some point, Fidel Castro in person, and this is a fact, not an opinion, Fidel Castro in person occupied the space left by God.
Yes.
Because nobody talked about God, nobody talks about the Bible. It was somehow forbidden to go to church. People were hiding their sacred heart of Jesus Christ. So, and not only Catholic religion, not only this applies also to Jewish religion. Many Jewish people were forced to abandon the country.
Mm-hmm.
To
sure.
Even to African Cuban religions like Santeria and others that seem to have more privileges, but at the end we were all victims of a system in which heart was the state, and not a mercifulness or not God.
And I would certainly take issue with the statement, excuse me, that education is still good in Cuba and that it's free. And it's not free if you have to give a life, a year of your life to military service or social service. And even the Minister of Education in Cuba said that last year there was a deficit of 10,000 teachers.
Mm. And it's not free when you have to read only the books they give you. That's the other point, too, that I always like to point out because, I went to, for part of my education in the United States, I went to public schools. But, a book about Marx was available in the library. I don't know too many books by Milton Friedman available in Cuban libraries. So I think that's the way to look at it. But let's talk a little bit about what is happening in Cuba right now. Orlando, I know you write a great deal about this, and I happen to be of the opinion that I could be wrong, but I'm of the opinion that Díaz-Canel is a transitional figure. I think he's just somebody they found who's loyal to Raul Castro and who will take the ball forward until it's convenient to put somebody else. Also, I believe that they needed to have someone without the Castro connection, and that's why Díaz-Canel was convenient. So that's how I feel about it, Orlando. How do you see it? You've written a lot about this.
Yes, I agree with you, Silvio, but when we say that Miguel Díaz-Canel, and when the American press, including the New York Times and Washington Post, publishes that Miguel Díaz-Canel is not a Castro, I think they need to research better. Because even in the speech, official speech of General Raul Castro in front of the National Assembly of the People's Power this April this year, Raul Castro recognized that Miguel Díaz-Canel has been trained by the Cuban government and the Cuban military since at least 20 years ago. And specifically, again, I'm quoting Raul Castro. he said, in 2013, we realized that this was the man, that this was exactly the kind of official, the kind of government, would be government that we wanted to prepare. And so in 2013, we decided that it would be a responsible decision to pass all of these, the position that he holds now as president of the Council of Ministers. And again, quoting Raul Castro, he said in front of the National Parliament that in 2021, if the work of Miguel Díaz-Canel is good enough, he could be also the president of the Communist Party. So he has been appointed by finger. He has not been voted in free, pluralistic election by the Cuban people. And yes, in a way, he's a transitional figure, but we don't know if that transition from Castroism to neo-Castroism, it will take 5 years or 10 years. We really don't know that. And history will tell. But what we do know now, and the New York Times should know better about this, is that in Cuba there is not taking place a process of democratization or opening or not even economical reforms. Because
right.
There might be economical reforms for foreigners, but the Cuban people is still prohibited to invest in our own economy in our country.
Right. And I want to ask you about economic reforms in a second, but I want to go back to Díaz-Canel. And again, you have the advantage of having lived there 5 years ago. We're out here, we're seeing it from a distance, and it's never as good as being there. But as far as you can tell, how popular is, not necessarily Díaz-Canel, but how popular is the regime with the young people? I think I know the answer, but I want to hear it from you.
I don't want to, I am not a representative of the Cuban people because I haven't been voted or selected or in elections. So I might have an opinion. I might say nobody cares. I have, even in my own family, my cousins, people from in their 20s, have never heard speech of Fidel Castro or Raul Castro or anything like that. No, but I don't want to be subjective. So why not making this question to the Cuban nation, to the Cuban people, to the Cuban citizens, including, of course, the Cuban nations that lives abroad, the exile, immigration, diaspora, whatever you may call it. So I'm talking about that Cuba in this moment, more than headlines in the New York Times, what we need is a referendum moment, a plebiscite moment, but not to legitimize the new appointee of the Cuban government, the new official that is going to keep the Communist Party in power as the sole force of the society. No, we need a plebiscite to really know how popular is the revolution, how willing or not the Cuban people is to move into a real political and economical transition. And this initiative, Silvio, maybe you know, of course, this initiative, citizen initiative, is already being led by Rosa Maria Payá.
Right.
And I recommend your audience, if they can, go to the page CubaDecide.org, so that we can learn a little about what Cubans are doing right now in order to foster that moment of inclusion, that moment of referendum, to know if the destiny of the nation is going to be permanently living under an authoritarian regime, or if maybe a true transition and a true process of normalization could start at some point in our beloved Cuba. No?
Yes. Let me ask Regina a question about that, and then we'll get to the economic reforms. Regina, you talk to people, like all of us talk to people who left Cuba recently or who have gone to Cuba. In your opinion, how popular, and again, it's only an opinion, I understand, and you're not representative of everybody, but just your opinion. Mm-hmm. How popular is the regime? Because I get the feeling it's not popular.
Well, you know, here in San Francisco, people are still living in the 60s and the 70s.
Right, right.
So,
unfortunately,
you know,
yes.
I talk to people. I used to get really angry and argue with them. Now I just go, oh, yeah, I used to believe that, too. I mean, people here still romanticize the revolution. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they still buy all the propaganda about the free health care, free good
right.
health care, free good education, blah, 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 blah. And they don't really want to look beneath the surface. I mean, people, you know, I certainly don't discourage people from going.
Mm-hmm.
But if they are going on one of these trips, and, of course, they're all licensed now, I say to them, you know, look beneath the surface. Take your guide aside,
mm-hmm.
buy him or her a beer, and talk privately and try to find out what's really going on there. And
right.
my
no,
feeling
I agree.
Is that most people don't care.
Right.
Or maybe.
Well, but that kind of indifference may very well be, you mean in Cuba or in San Francisco?
In San Francisco.
You mean, yeah. Well, yeah, unfortunately. You know, it's unfortunate. It's a beautiful city, of course. It's a beautiful weather,
yes.
to say the least, compared to our weather in Texas. But sometimes I'm sure it must be very frustrating. But let me ask Orlando, we have a few minutes, and I just want to hear from you. We hear a lot about reforms in Cuba, private property reforms. I mean, it's like, my goodness, you would think this is something, but it not really, is it? I mean, just tell me what your sense is of reforms and economic and political, particularly economic, Orlando.
Yes, Silvio. Unfortunately, Cuba is passing a new constitution that in principle will be approved next February 2019. And reading this constitution, this is not my opinion, respectfully reading the new communist constitution of the Cuban Revolution, I can only say that the kind of property that is going to be prevailing in Cuba is social property. That means the property of the state and the property of the Communist Party. Private property will remain minoritary and limited to domestic businesses that in America probably will not even pay taxes because they are very, very small businesses. And then when it comes to, so we are not invited, in terms of economical reforms, the Cuban people is not invited to participate in the economical life of Cuba. We are not going into the China model. We are not going into the Vietnam model because the Cuban government distrusts the economical empowerment of the Cuban citizen. And if I may add, in terms of political
sure.
reforms, there we have the Article 3, Article 5 of the new Cuban Constitution that explicitly say that all Cuban citizens are bound to obey the Communist Party, which is the only one legal in the nation. So, my dear American friends, listeners, if you are a socialist, you are banned
mm-hmm.
in Cuba. You are prohibited to associate in
right.
Cuba because you need to be a member of the Communist Party. If you are an ecological activist, if you are an LGBT activist or African-American or minorities activist, you are banned in Cuba already because all subjects and all forms of association in Cuba are to be controlled by the Communist Party. That, to say the least, is very sad. And please, if you travel to Cuba, try not to be part of that a formula of that equation of oppression of the Cuban people, because we all want the best for our nation, no? including
mm-hmm.
many Americans, of course.
Yeah, let me ask you maybe too logical of a question, because I'm not sure that the dictatorship has thought about this, or maybe they have, I don't know. But these economic reforms are going to make it very unattractive or impossible to bring in the kinds of investment that the country will need to actually create employment and create jobs. Again, maybe I'm being too logical. But because, I mean, who in the world is going to – how are you going to open a business in Cuba if you have no way of hiring your own people or even keeping your profits? So, I mean, these reforms are going to fail just by the – they don't make any economic sense, Orlando.
Well, I don't know if I am quoting Vladimir Lenin or Karl Marx now, but I would say capitalism and capitalists like and enjoy to produce the rope
right.
with which the hangman is going to hang them. hang them up. Yeah. So in many ways, it's happening already from the European Union, from Asia, from
mm-hmm.
China, from Iran, from many countries, that there are investment in Cuba. There have been foreign entrepreneurs, leaders of enterprises
mm-hmm.
that have been put into jail in Cuba,
mm-hmm.
and they lost all of their properties. I am thinking even of the Canadian, Sikto
mm-hmm.
Makian. He was an enterprise of metallurgic industry. Also, Stephen Porbis from UK. He lost everything in the hotel business. So it's happening already, Silvio. People are willing to step on the island, maybe because they feel that something good is going to happen, maybe because they just love my country, so
mm-hmm.
I honor their decision. But certainly when you invest in Cuba, you are not going into an open market economy, you are
right.
not going into the rule of law. You are going into an arbitrary state capitalism where you could lose everything with the blink of an eye. No?
Right, and rule of law is the most important point, because in order to have real prosperity and real investments and all of that, you have to have a rule of law. Without that, it's just China or whatever. And
mm-hmm.
We want to have our own. Let me do this. Let me give each one of you a couple of minutes to make a final statement about the book or whatever else, Orlando, you want to talk about. So, Regina, just a couple of minutes. Tell us about the book and what you'll be doing and your thoughts overall about what we talked about today, Regina.
Okay, well, I really appreciate being able to talk about the book, and Havana Babylonia, of course, is available on Amazon in both Spanish and English. This is the new
mm-hmm.
edition, and it's today I'm going to be moderating a discussion about a movie named Candelaria, which takes place in 1994 in the special period, so it's going to be
mm-hmm.
interesting to see how many people, whether that even comes up, whether people want to talk about it. And you know, it's wonderful to have Orlando here, and
mm-hmm.
I will let him talk. And thank you again, Silvio.
Yes, very
and just one
thank
quick,
you very much
if I may, Orlando, one
si?
Orlando, let me just ask Regina a
yes.
very quick question before you come on, please. Regina, is this conference that you're going to today, is it going to be, can we watch it, I guess what I'm saying? Is it going to be recorded or videotaped or something?
I'm going to have somebody record the discussion,
okay.
and I will send you the link to the movie.
Oh, good, good.
And you can see that, and, you know, it's... It should be interesting. I have no idea what to expect,
sure.
I don't know how much time we're going to have for discussion, but we'll see what happens. And
well,
if,
I'm sure it'll be great. Send me that as soon as you have it. I would love to. I really would love to watch it.
I will certainly do that, Silvio.
Yes,
thank
Orlando.
You again.
Oh, my
yeah,
pleasure.
Thank you very much,
Orlando?
Silvio, and for being part of your program and sharing this excellent program with Regina and Abby also. I recommend to the readers, to your listeners, Havana Babylonia by Amir Baye.
Mm-hmm.
It's in Amazon. There is a lot of truth there. Yes, it's harsh, it's difficult, but it's true, true to life, true to heart. And please, if you're an American intellectual or
mm-hmm.
a reader or a person that loves truth, life in truth, do not pay so much attention to filmmaker Michael Moore when he did the film documentary Sicko about the public health in Cuba. Or please do not pay so much attention to Oliver Stone's Comandante,
right.
a film
right.
about the revolution in the last decade. Or even, please, don't pay so much attention to the linguistic and philosopher Noam Chomsky when he goes to and
mm-hmm.
talk about the Cuban revolution and all the mythology of the revolution. Pay attention to an author that cannot live and cannot return to his own country, like Amir Baye. By the way, in his own country, his own city, Havana, where his mother is very ill right now, and the
mm-hmm.
Cuban government ruthlessly is not allowing Amir Baye to travel back to his own country to visit his dying mother.
Mm-hmm.
I recommend the
wow.
reading, really recommend the reading of Havana, Babylonia by Amir Baye.
Mm-hmm.
It's in Amazon. It's not an expensive book. It's in Spanish. It's in English. Because by reading this very, very, very difficult and maybe, yes, problematic and troubling areas of Cuban society, you are paying justice. You are somehow respecting the pain and also the struggle of the Cuban people in the last decades.
That's right. No, I agree with both of you so much. And it's important to again, to understand that the book is a very graphic description, but it is what these ladies have had to go through. And and I don't know any other way of saying it, but I want to thank both of you for being a part of our show today. We will be uploading the show later in about an hour or so. When it's ready, we'll be uploading it to the websites and so on. Our friends over at Babalu will get to hear it later as well. And we'll put links on the show information for Regina and Orlando. But if the links don't work, you can just Google their names and find Regina's book in Amazon. And Orlando, you have your own website, I believe, or ways of reaching you as well. But thank you so much to both of you. It's always a great honor to chat with both of you, and I learn so much when I do. And, yes, the weather is lovely in San Francisco. I will say that,
it
Regina.
Is.
You have better weather than we do. There's no question about
thank
that.
Thank you, Silvio.
Thank you very much.
When it's 100 degrees here, I think of you
and
your beautiful weather in San Francisco, Regina.
It's in the 60s here.
I know. Don't tell us about it. But,
well, come visit. You're welcome to come visit anytime, Silvio.
Well, thank you so much. Orlando, you have a great day.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you so much. Our friends Regina Anavi and Orlando Luis Pablo Pardo Lasso, a couple of our great friends. And to everybody listening on the Internet, thank you so much. But I think Orlando and Regina are making a very good point, not just about the book, but life in Cuba in general, that if you go to Cuba, and, you know, I know some of you do, and I understand that. I personally haven't, but that's okay. It's my decision. But if you go to Cuba, just remember that there's really two Cubas. There's the one that you see with a pretty smile, and then there's the other one behind where people are suffering deeply. And that's the Cuba that we care a great deal about. Thank you so much. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and have a great day.